This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
I'm Tony Brisky. Thanks for joining us. We go now to the courtroom for segment number one of today's coverage in the trial of Scott Peterson, the Parkland School Resource Police Officer, charged with negligence in failing to protect the children of Parkland as a gunman went through the school executing many, many students. Let's go to the courtroom.
Sir, once you are seated, if I can get you to scoot that chair up as far forward as it will go. If you can please state your full name and spell your full name.
John William Joseph Curcio, last name spelling C-U-R-C-I-O.
And J-O-H-N.
Yes, sir.
Ms. Gomes, you may inquire.
Thank you, Judge. Good morning, Detective Curcio.
How are you?
Please introduce yourself to the jury and tell them where you work.
My name is John Curcio. I work currently for the Broward Sheriff's Office.
How long have you worked for the Broward Sheriff's Office?
2009, I started with the Sheriff's Office.
Give the jury a little background on what you did before 2009.
1980, I joined the Fort Lauderdale Police Department. I retired from them in 2009. I did 13 years as a homicide detective for the Fort Lauderdale Police Department. 10 days after I retired, I joined the Sheriff's Office, where I've been a homicide detective with them, other than the original, I think, 10 or 11 months they wanted to see me in uniform, so I did uniform, and then I went back to working homicides for the Sheriff's Office.
When you say they wanted to see you in uniform, do you mean that after retiring as a homicide detective, you went back to the road?
Yes. For the Sheriff's Office, I worked for the City of Lauderdale Lakes as a uniformed officer. It was just part of BSO's standard protocol that when you were a new employee, you had to do some time in uniform.
Once you completed your time on the road, did you go straight into, I don't know if you refer to it as a detective bureau?
Yes, I went straight to becoming a homicide detective for the Sheriff's Office.
Now, over your time as a detective handling homicides, if you know approximately how many homicides have you handled?
I've handled hundreds of homicides, but we do other things than homicides. We do any form of unattended deaths, which could be an accidental death, a suicide. I've done thousands of those types of investigations, but several hundred homicides.
Explain generally for the jury how a detective is assigned to a particular case.
Well, normally we at the Sheriff's Office, we're a team. We have a two-man team, and we're on call for periods of 2 weeks at a time. Unless you get involved in a homicide investigation, then you're taken off call for that. During that two-week period of time, you handle all the rest of the death investigations that I described in that two-week period of time.
Back in 2018, you were a homicide detective, correct?
Yes.
Explain for the jury what your connection is to the MSD case as it relates to your role as a homicide detective.
I was the lead detective assigned that investigation.
As the lead detective, who were you investigating?
We charged Nicholas Cruz with that particular incident.
Did you respond to the school on February 14th?
Yes, I did.
Explain for the jury what you were doing that day when you first received the call.
Myself and about five or six homicide detectives were in our homicide squad room, which is at 2601 West Broward. One of our lieutenant colonels kind of came running into the squad room and said there was a shooting up at the school, and we all the homicide detectives that were in the squad room ran down to our cars, jumped in our cars, put on our lights and sirens, and responded up the turnpike to Stoneman Douglas.
Do you recall approximately what time you arrived on campus?
Not without looking at the actual timeline. I know we got to the scene right around the same time that the Broward Sheriff's Office SWAT team was starting to make entry into the west side of the 1200 building. So I'd have to look at the timeline. We got up there relatively quickly because we were able to park right alongside of the 1200 building on the east roadway. And after a few minutes, there were so many cars up there, you couldn't park within miles of the school.
And the reason I ask, when you're responding to the scene, what's your understanding as to whether it's an active scene or?
Well, again, all we knew was that when the lieutenant colonel kind of told us what was going on, that there was a shooting, somebody had been shot, and we didn't know much more of that. When we were, I was in my car separately as we're going up the turnpike. You know, as fast as we could. So there wasn't a lot of information that we knew other than what the lieutenant colonel had told us.
When you arrived on campus, what is the approach you took as far as responding to the scene? Was there a specific approach because of the term active shooter?
Well, again, when we got to the scene, we were able to park the group of homicide detectives I'm describing on the east side, and there were hundreds of students self-evacuating the school when we got there. They were coming off every exit point they could. And as we were coming out of our cars, we were trying to gather intelligence or information as to what was going on campus from them as they were running by us. We were making them drop their backpacks, and we were trying to get some intelligence information as to what actually was going on.
Explain for us why, in that moment when you're arriving to the scene of a shooting, you would stop and talk to the children.
Well, again, I didn't have any idea really what was going on at the school at that point, so you're trying to gain information so you know what to do as a police officer.
Is there any active shooting going on while you're doing this?
No, there was no gunshots going off, just all the kids self-evacuating.
Did the lack of gunshots impact your response at all?
Well, when you respond on any scene, whether it's an active shooter or anything in police work, you're trying to gather intelligence as to what you're dealing with. So when you're not hearing the shots, you're still trying to gather intelligence from the students. Where is something happening? What did you see? What did you hear? To react to what you're going to do.
And if you were hearing shots, what does your training dictate that would change?
You're supposed to go towards the shots to find out, investigate what's going on.
Is that true for a domestic or any scene?
Yes.
When you stopped those children and spoke to them, were you able to gather any information?
No, none of the kids had any information. We asked them to go. There was a berm on the road further east to all sit down over there. And while we were talking to, the groups that were just filing out of the school, other detectives were kind of like still questioning the groups that were sitting on the berm, and no one had any information as to what was going on the campus.
While this is happening, you explained that SWAT had already arrived, correct?
Yes.
And so was there a significant officer presence already working the 1200 building?
Well, I can only see SWAT on the west side. When we first got there, I didn't know who was in the 1200 building at that point. I just knew they were on the west side doors starting to make entry. So, yeah, there was police presence, but, we can only see what was on the east side along the 1200 building down to the bus loop. I couldn't tell what was on the west side because the buildings blocked our view.
What happens next?
At one point, while we're on that site, again, still trying to interview all these students coming off, there was a radio communication that I heard from another detective's radio from somebody in the video room saying that the shooter was coming down from the third floor to the second floor of the 1200 building. And then there was a pause, and then eventually we realized that somebody was looking at the video from 20 minutes earlier and describing what they had seen in the building 20 minutes earlier. So it was not real-time information.
What happens when you realize that information is lagged?
Again, we're still doing the same thing, trying to gather intelligence from the kids coming off campus. Shortly thereafter, somebody came up with the name of the suspect and put it over the radio. So now we're actually re-engaging with the students who came off the campus who were sitting on the berm or coming off. Anybody know what Nicholas Cruz looks like? Because we had no idea. He could have been in the group we had separated on the berm.
So at some point, it does become known to the officers on scene that the shooter has left the building.
They knew that the video feed was 20 minutes earlier. He had left the 1200 building, but they didn't know he had left the campus, I don't think. But they knew he left the 1200 building because you could see that.
When you realize that the shooter has left the building, as a detective that's going to be handling homicide, this specific homicide, what is your role in that moment?
Well, again, my moment, we're still doing all the things we've been doing since the moment we stepped up there. But now I'm talking to students, I'm on my phone trying to get on social media, trying to come up with a picture of Nicholas Cruz. I'm trying to get any of the students who know him to provide me a picture so we know what this guy looks like. And then one of the assistant principals, who's kind of in this, you know, this mass of students, hears the name and says, I know what he, you know, I know what Nicholas Cruz looks like, because I had done a threat assessment with him at the school. And that was Denise Reed.
Was Denise Reed able to provide you with a photograph?
She was trying to get it through ROTC, I believe, again, through the school radio communication system. And then we heard over the radio that he had been stopped. So Denise Reed got in a car with homicide detective Zach Scott and myself and Zach Scott in separate vehicles, started heading down to the location where Nicholas Cruz had been detained.
How far from the school was Nicholas Cruz detained?
Several miles. He was down in Coral Springs in a residential area.
Was the route that he took when he left the campus learned?
Eventually, as the investigation proceeded, he went westbound through the school grounds. He blended in with the other students, self-evacuating, ended up in the Walmart, which is just west of the school. Then he traveled down to a McDonald's, which is just southwest of the school, and then eventually into the residential area where he was detained.
Was it learned which side of the 1200 building he exited?
Yeah, he exited the west side, with the west doors.
Once the shooter was detained, did you respond to the area that he was being held?
I attempted to, but again, by the time all this is occurring, the traffic was... It was incredible because you had every law enforcement, paramedic, fire department, family members all heading to the school, plus you had normal rush hour traffic. I never got down there before they ended up transferring him up to Broward Medical North to be medically cleared. So I kind of like diverted halfway down to where he was detained to get to the hospital, which was where he was being brought to.
I know this investigation was very vast, so I'm going to streamline it a bit, but did you ultimately interview the shooter?
Yes, I did.
Explain for the members of the jury, just generally, approximately how long you spoke with the shooter, not what the contents of that conversation.
I spoke to him for several hours, but I was with him probably for, and again, I'd have to look at my notes, anywhere between 10 and 12 hours before I ended up actually formally booking him on a probable cause charge.
As the lead detective on this case, explain what your role would be as far as walking the crime scene. Is that something you ever did in this case?
Yes. After we formally booked him and he was brought to the jail, I ended up going up to the crime scene where the other homicide detectives had remained from the time that myself and Zach Scott left to go where he had been, you know, originally stopped.
Did you familiarize yourself with the campus and with the 1200 building?
Yes.
Approximately how many hours or days initially in this investigation did you spend on that campus, having walked the campus?
Well, I mean, we did the walkthrough over the course of the years that this investigation took against Nicholas Cruz several times. More so was the video that we watched and ended up reviewing more times than we did walkthroughs, at least myself.
Are you familiar then with the surveillance system at the school?
Yes.
You're familiar with where certain cameras are placed and located?
Yes.
And you familiarized yourself with the location of the particular 1200 building as to where the camera angle is looking at?
Yes.
Now, as part of your investigation, did you learn the names of the victims that were located on each individual floor?
Yes, I did.
Explain for the members of the jury how that happened in those first hours or days.
All right, well, I was actually at the public safety building with the suspect. Again, a team of homicide detectives remained on the scene. And they were the ones who physically were able to identify each of the victims. Which took a period of time because, again, some of the students didn't have identification on them, and it took several hours for us to get their true names.
And I don't mean to be crass when I say this, but by the time you walked the first floor and the third floor, had the deceased been removed?
Yes, all the victims had been removed by the time I got up there.
Was it part of your job as understanding the crime scene to know, nevertheless, where each victim had died?
Yeah, I walked through with the detectives who were on the scene. The video itself actually showed a clearer portrayal of where they were when they passed, because once the entry teams began to come in to try to rescue the kids in the classrooms, the living kids, some of the victims' deceased bodies had to be moved away from doorways so that entry could be made. So not only did I speak to the detectives who were on the scene who saw and found where the victims had been moved to, we watched the video where you could tell where they actually fell before they were moved.
And after watching that video, you yourself walked and were able to physically stand in the location where those individuals had been shot or killed, correct?
Yes, several times.
I'd like to focus on the first floor. If you could describe to the members of the jury just briefly the names of the individuals that were killed on the first floor.
All right, the deceased on the first floor.
I'm going to object this to relevance since my client was on the scene at that point.
The relevance is?
Well, Judge, the relevance is just the order of operation, the timeline that took place. Where his client was at what time is pretty relevant.
Okay. Over the defense objection. Go ahead, sir. That's overruled. You can answer the question.
All right, the first floor, coming in through the east side of the 1200 building, first floor, you had Gina Maltalto, Martin Duque, Luke Hoyer. A little further into the first floor was Alex Schachter, Alyssa Alt-Tadef, Helena Ramsey, Nicholas Dorett, Carmen Shentrup, Christopher Hickson, which was a staff member, and Aaron Feiss, who was a staff member.
And did you, if I didn't hear, say Elena Petty?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, Elena Petty.
Now,
I apologize for that.
And as far as processing the crime scene, was there a crime scene tech that was assigned to collect the shell casings and ensure that the scene was properly processed?
Yeah, there was numerous crime scene people at the school. Each one, as if I recall correctly, there was teams on each floor, assigned each floor.
And as the lead detective, are you involved in making sure that that happens in the investigation?
Yeah, I mean, they're all... they all have their own supervisors, but ultimately the homicide lead detective is responsible to make sure everything's done properly.
Were you responsible for also, and we won't go through each individual's name, but were you responsible for also learning the names of those who were wounded but not deceased?
Yes.
And were there several on the first floor?
There was numerous on the first floor, yes.
As part of your investigation, did you learn whether any rounds have been shot on the second floor?
Yes, when we were able to not only do the physical examination of the second floor, but watching the video as well. On the second floor, there were several classrooms that were shot into.
And let me back up. Who was the last person to be shot on the first floor?
Coach Aaron Feiss.
And Coach Aaron Feiss, what time was Coach Aaron Feiss shot?
2:23:25.
And at 2:23:25, how many times was Aaron Feiss shot?
Twice in the chest.
Ms. Gomes, is this an item that's already in evidence?
It is. I apologize. We're now showing the screen, but I'm going to turn my screen as well. What's in evidence as states 5. This is the full 6 hours of surveillance.
Court Deputy Nick, all the TVs are off.
door, if you look at that image, off to the left where the rifle is being pointed at, which enters into the staircase, and then that door in front of you where you see Nicholas Cruz coming out with the gun leads into the main hallway of the first floor. And it's a mirror image on the east side as well.
So if you're standing on the west side of the building, is there a set of doors that will lead you into the hallway and a set of doors that will lead you into the stairwell?
Yes.
And did you yourself enter this location that we see on this image? You're familiar with this stairwell?
Yes.
Where was, in reference to the image we're looking at, Aaron Feist's body found?
The doors where the rifle is being pointed and you see that bright light, he was found right on the concrete patio area where those doors would have opened up into, as if he was coming into those doors when he was shot.
Were crime scene investigators or yourself able to discover whether at the time that he was shot, the doors were open or closed?
Well, the doors were open because he got shot from, Nicholas Cruz was inside the building. He was just making, appeared consistent with him just making entry into the building when he was killed.
And at 2:23:26, was this the last killing that takes place on the first floor?
Yes.
So all of the other deaths that take place happen after 2:23:26.
That is correct.
And how many shell casings, if you know, were discovered, and I apologize if you already said this, on this second floor?
I believe on the second floor it was six.
Were any students shot on the second floor?
No.
Turning your attention to the third floor.
Yes.
Judge, can we turn the screens off for a moment while he sets up for the next video? Now, it may seem like a silly question, but did the shooter go from the first floor to the second floor to the third floor?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
And when the shooter enters the third floor at 2:24:30?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
At 2:24:30, when the shooter is on the third floor, explain for us the names of the victims that were shot and were deceased on the third floor.
From the east side of the third floor going to the west, teacher Scott Beagle was killed. Kara Longren, Meadow Pollock, Joaquim Oliver, Jamie Guttenberg, and Peter Wang.
In addition to those that were killed, were there other victims that were wounded?
Yes, there was.
And what are their names?
We had a teacher by the name of Stacy LaPelle was on the third floor, Kyle Lyman, Marion Kabachenko, and Anthony Borges.
While the shooter is working his way, killing people on the third floor,
yes,
approximately how many rounds were recovered from the third floor?
I believe there was over 61 rounds on the third floor.
And those 61 rounds, they were all fired while he spent his 3 minutes or so, or however long, on the third floor?
Yes.
Before exiting the building?
Yes.
Do you recall what time the shooter ended up blending in with the rest of the students?
I'm going to refresh my memory and see if I can. cannot have it here without my full report unless you have something you can show me.
Does 229 sound correct? We can pull up the video if you need.
No, that sounds correct.
Okay. So...
I'm going to object. 229?
Two.
We'll just pull up the video, Your Honor.
Yeah, the objection is sustained. Go ahead, Ms. Gomes. Ask your next question.
Okay. Jeff, we can turn the screen on. Detective Cruz, I'm asking you to take a moment.
Actually, it's 227.55.
It's when the shooter leaves the building or places his gun down?
Oh, yeah, places his gun on the staircase.
Okay. And after placing his gun on the staircase, he then goes down the three flights of stairs.
Yeah, I found it in my notes. So.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And so do you, if you don't know, that's fine. The time that he actually blends in with the students.
He runs for a period of time before he catches up to the hundreds who are fleeing westbound.
Okay.
So, I mean, he takes a few seconds to get there.
Okay. So, turning your attention to the screen, do you see the three images on your screen?
Yes.
Describe for the members of the jury where these cameras are located, starting with the camera on the left. Are you familiar with this stairwell?
Yes.
Did you personally walk this stairwell?
Many times.
Where is this stairwell? In reference to the 1200 building or inside the 1200 building?
The picture on the left is coming down from the second floor of the east stairwell down to the first floor. That door that's open on the bottom is where Nicholas Cruz first entered into the hallway after loading his gun.
And the image in the middle, what are we looking at?
That's, again, a camera from the actual the hallway itself shooting westbound down the hallway.
So this camera is located on the east side of the hallway?
Yeah, it's facing from the east door. It's a camera that shoots westbound towards the west door of the first floor.
And the image on the right, are you familiar with this camera placement?
Yes.
Where is this camera placed?
That's the location by the 700 building, which is the building just west of the 1200 building.
Is this camera angle looking west to east?
I believe it's the opposite. I think it's east to west, but I mean, I'd have to actually watch it.
Okay, well, we're going to hit play.
Yeah. It looks to me, it looks like it's east to west, but I may be wrong. Yeah, it's definitely that right screen is east.
Okay, that's
left east. Is east.
Okay, the right of the screen is east.
Yes.
Okay. On the top of the screen, what time it is?
2:24:03 on all three cameras.
Now, the image on the left of the screen, the east stairwell, is that stairwell, let me show you a map. Judge, I'm showing what has been pre-marked as Defense Exhibit F. The east stairwell that we just saw on that screen, can you please point to where that is on this map?
Oh, yeah.
And now, is this, just show the jury, where is north, south, east, and west on this map?
Well, north is that way. East is that way. This is where we were at with all the self-evacuating students, and this is west going towards where Nicholas Cruz pointed in.
So that stairwell that we just saw, show us one more time.
Right here.
If you know, how far, what is the distance between this east side of the 1200 building And building 7, the 700 building.
I think it was 75 feet in that range.
Your investigation into Nicholas Cruz, were you tasked with speaking with witnesses?
Yes.
Explain the process that you took with the witnesses in this case.
Well, one of the things we did, obviously, is we started interviewing people who knew him or had encounters with him in the past, people that were up at the school who potentially had dealt with him on whatever the circumstance was. Any witnesses who came forward to the actual shooting incident themselves, we interviewed. Most of the people we interviewed were background type witnesses.
Did you also interview the fact witnesses that had been on scene at the time of the shooting?
Yes.
As part of your investigation, did you interview the school resource officer, Scott Peterson?
Yes, I did.
And what detective assisted you with that interview?
Homicide Detective Jeff Curtis.
Why did you interview Scott Peterson?
He had dealings with Peterson in the past up at the school, with Cruz earlier in his career up at the school. And we interviewed other BSO deputies who had calls of service involving Nicholas Cruz as well.
Please walk the jury through the process you took when interviewing Scott Peterson.
We were in a conference room, basically took a sworn statement from him with a digital tape recorder, asked him about the day of the incident, and asked him about any past dealings he had ever had with Nicholas Cruz and what those entailed.
When you're in the interview room, was it made clear that there was a recording device?
Yeah, it was right on the table in front. In fact, I swore him in on, or either I did or Jeff Curtis swore him in under oath.
When you say that you swore him in, what does that mean?
Basically, it's the oath to swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. It's just a formality of, this is what you need to do, tell the truth, and if not, it's, perjury.
Did Scott Peterson indicate that he understood he was giving a sworn statement?
Yes.
Why do you say that?
Because, again, we had the interview, and the tape recorder's right in front of him, and I asked questions, he answered them.
When you were interviewing him, was it for matters material to your investigation of the shooter?
Yes.
And it was under oath, you already said, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Why put a police officer under oath if you're taking a statement from him? Aren't you all...
You guys make me swear to my police reports, too. We do everything under oath.
So even though he was a police officer, you still swore him in like you did the civilian witnesses?
Yes, just like you did when I took the stand here.
Now, did you ask Deputy Peterson if he understood what perjury meant when you swore him in?
I'm going to refresh my memory exactly what the wording was. Yeah, I did, and his response, again, I don't know if that's me or Jeff talking, but his response was, I do.
Okay. How did Scott Peterson become aware of the fact that something was happening on campus?
He had heard, according to his statement, a faculty member named Drew Medina come over the school radio, not the police radio, but the school radio, saying something about hearing some sounds, possibly firecrackers or something to that effect at the 1200 building.
Did you confirm with Scott Peterson that he heard that the sounds were coming from the 1200 building?
Again, I'd have to look at his statement for exact terminology.
And I'll refer you to page 7.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Scott Peterson's own words were that Andrew Medina said that he heard firecrackers in the 1200 building.
Did the defendant tell you how close he got to the 1200 building?
Yes.
And what were his words?
He got very close. I think he said within 10 feet, but again, I'd have to look at the exact. So that's what I recall. Yes, he got within a few feet.
Did he tell you that he heard gunfire?
Yes.
Did he tell you that he looked inside the building?
No, he did not.
Did he look in any of the windows?
No.
Did he tell you that he ever interacted with any students?
As I recall, he said he didn't see anybody coming out of the building.
Was the statement that you took of the defendant transcribed?
Yes, it was.
Your Honor, may I approach the witness?
You may.
Detective, I'm showing you what has been pre-marked as States 3A. Can you take a look at this, please?
Yep, it was a transcribed copy of the digital sworn statement I took from Scott Peterson.
Judge, at this time, the state will move into evidence what's been pre-marked as 3A as States 52.
Any objection?
We have no objection.
Without objection, States 3A for identification will now be in evidence. That is States Exhibit 52.
Judge, I'm going to need the Elma. When it says
1302
hours, is that military time?
Yeah, it's 1:02, 1 p.m.
So what date and time did you take this statement?
February 16th, 2016. Actually, it should be 2018, but that's a transcription error.
Okay, and why do you say that?
Because I know it happened in 2018.
All right, and what is a CCN?
That's it's kind of like your badge number, but it's not. It's your ID number that everything, you know, you do work-related, they identify you by a number.
Now, this entire transcript is in evidence now, but I'm going to direct your attention to certain pages. Give me just a moment.
No problem.
Turning your attention to page 10 of the transcript.
Yes.
Would you please? Read for the members of the jury the question and answer on page 10.
Starting at the highlighted section, the question was, okay, now, as you're approaching the building and you're that close and you're doing what you're talking about with both radios, are you in a position to cover or you're still standing? And he, Mr. Peterson's answer was, no, no, that's where I then realized I'm out in the open in the middle. So I then go back towards the right at the corner of the 7 and 800 building and I go back, I bring Greenleaf, I bring back over here, and then I obviously whip my gun out. I'm taking a position on the east side of the doorway, and I can also see down the sidewalk looking out west. I get a good two-dimensional of the whole building at that point.
Continue,
want me to
please.
Continue?
Yes, please.
Okay, then my question is, okay. So I'm right there, I'm on the radio, I can hear the units coming, and the next thing, while I'm keeping an eye on the door in the building, I don't, no shots, nothing anymore, it's quiet. My question, okay, so you're right here is what you're saying. We had a little map that he was pointing things out. And then his answer, yes, I'm right. I'm looking out so I can see the door and I can see out here. I got a good look, or I got a good.
I'll ask you to read just this question and answer and repeat it.
Okay, do you see any students or any people around the 12 Hender building at that point? And his answer was no, nobody.
Just kind of turning your attention to page 12 of 36.
Okay.
Ask you to read, starting with the highlighted portion.
All right, we're discussing Coral Springs Officer Burton in this section, and the question is, all right, what happens from there? Scott Peterson's answer was, and he runs up by the tree, and I'm just telling him, you know, I heard a couple of shots, haven't heard anything since, and he's just taking cover by, you know, behind the tree, and I'm taking cover here. And units are now starting, you know, no more gunshots, and units are starting to come in. And then my question is, okay, as the units start to come in, what do you see and what do you do? And then the answer by Scott Peterson was, well, as the units start coming in, the first units are coming in saying, hey, there's someone shot over by the football field, you know. I know where the football field is. It's quite a distance from this building. So when I start hearing they talk about the victim over by the football field, in my mind, I was kind of, is he maybe running towards that? Maybe he's not even in this building. He might be somewhere way out over there. I mean, in my mind, I obviously didn't know, you know, where the shooter was. And then I started wondering if he had fled westbound at that point, because they were talking about people injured near the football field, which is quite a distance from the building.
Okay.
Want me to continue?
I'll direct you just a moment.
No problem.
Okay. Directing you to page 14. Why did you ask him? What's in your thought process? What's the importance of asking him if he saw any children leave the building?
Well, again, we use the word active intelligence to try to figure out what's going on. Active intelligence goes beyond hearing gunshots. It's everything from seeing casings to a blood trail to getting information from people as to what's going on. Those are all the term active intelligence. So, just like I was trying to do, interviewing all those students, I was asking him if he got any active intelligence by talking to anybody.
Okay, and the highlighted question and answer, please. Actually, if you could start right above it.
Did you go in the 12 at all? No, because no. Question, okay, now did you ever see, you know, while everybody is starting to arrive, did you ever see any of the students leaving Building 12 at all? Yes. Question, which were they, all the doors, or no, they were evacuating, they were taking them out, and the kids were going out towards the parking lot. Okay, that's when the officers arrived. but you didn't see any kids. No, when I was on the scene, there were no individuals running out, none.
Did you confirm? Oh, sorry, keep going.
Okay, so there was no kids that ran out to say to you guys, hey, there's a guy up there or anything like that, and his answer was no.
Okay. Now, did you confirm, when you're taking this statement, have you already reviewed the surveillance cameras?
The only video we had reviewed at that point was the interior of the 1200 building. The exterior we had not viewed yet because it had been taken to another site. So when I was taking the statement, I had not seen any of the exterior videos at all.
So is the point of this statement just to gather whatever information he may have had from the scene that day?
Not only from the scene, but background about his interactions with Nicholas Cruz in the past.
Turn your attention to page. Now, how many gunshots did the defendant tell you that he heard?
Two or three.
Explain to the members of the jury what the purpose is of asking this final question here towards the end of the interview that we see that's highlighted on page 35.
That's a standard question I ask anybody I'm interviewing. Is there anything else that I failed to ask you that you feel is important or relevant, you know, again, that I haven't asked you?
So that wasn't something unique to this interview?
Every interview I do, I try to incorporate that because, again, I'm asking the questions, but is there something I haven't asked you that's important that I need to know?
I apologize, I asked you about it, but I didn't show you. I'm going to refer you to the bottom of page 9. Can you read that question at the bottom of page 9 for us?
The very last one?
Yes.
All right, once you get closer and you hear those guys, how many rounds do you think you heard? And then that was the response on page 10. It wasn't many, two, three.
Detective Curcio, how many rounds in total were fired inside the 1200 building?
I'd have to look to make sure. Let's see. I believe it was over 130, 131, I believe.
So over 130?
Yes.
And how many rounds in total between the second and the third floor from that time after Aaron Feiss is shot onward?
70.
Now, I asked you the names. Well, you did. You provided us with the names of the wounded as well on the third floor. Okay, just a moment, Tim Furrier.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. to direct you to page 14 of 36. You have it copied, that's fine. I ask you to read for us the question that begins with, okay, so there was, towards the bottom of the page.
Okay, so there was no kids that ran out to say to you guys, hey, there's a guy up there or anything of that, and the answer was no.
Next question.
The question, you didn't see any kids until police started being evacuated by the police, and then his response was yes.
Cross-examination, go ahead. Thank you, Your
Honor. Good morning, Detective. Sir?
You and I have met during deposition, correct?
Yes.
In fact, there were three separate days that we conducted the deposition back in 2021, correct?
I don't remember the exact date, but there was 2.5 days worth of deposition, yes.
Okay. And you understood at that time that all your answers would be memorialized in a transcript, correct?
Yes.
And you rose your right hand and swore to tell the truth the same way you are now, correct?
Yes.
And we went over the details of your investigation into the Nicholas Cruz case, correct?
I'm sure we went into some part of it, yes. I don't know if we went into the full details of it.
And we also talked about your involvement in this particular case, correct?
Yes.
Right. You remember the prosecutor asking you about the kids and adults who were shot on the first floor of the 1200 building, correct?
Yes.
Without question, my client wasn't even at the scene when those shootings took place. Isn't that correct?
No, he was on the scene when Aaron Feist got shot.
Got it. Except for Aaron Feist in the stairwell on the first floor. Other than that, my client was not even there when those kids were
not killed. Not based on the video timeline. He was approaching the building.
So there's nothing he could have physically done to prevent their tragic demise. Isn't that correct, sir?
I disagree on Chris Hickson.
Okay. So we'll talk about the first shots that were fired in the stairwell. Remember when the prosecutor asked you about that? That was at 2:23:55. Correct? I'm sorry, 2:23:25. Isn't that correct?
Okay, the first shots when Luke Hoyer and you talking about those? That?
I'm referring to when Aaron Feist was shot at 2:23:25. Correct?
Okay. Yes.
And 1 second after that, you are aware that that's when my client announces shots fired, possible firecrackers, possible shots fired. Remember that?
I don't remember the exact terminology. That sounds accurate based on the timeline, yes.
And that was 1 second after Aaron Feist was shot at 2:23:25. Isn't that correct, sir?
Yes.
And when Aaron Feist was shot, the door was open. The door to the stairwell was open. Isn't that correct?
That's what it appeared to be.
And Aaron Feist was on the opposite side of the door, correct?
He was, in my opinion, making entry when he was shot. He fell backwards outside the door.
Let me show you what is in evidence as defense exhibit number one. And if you could show us where Aaron Feist's body was found. You just point to it, please.
In this area here.
Okay, you pointed up at the column. It was actually down on the concrete ground, correct?
Yeah, again, the body was moved, but it was down towards this area here.
Okay, are you showing us that it was outside of this door?
Yeah, he fell outside the door.
Okay.
The door was open, and he fell backwards.
Now, that shot was different than the other shots fired in that there was no door that was open when the other shots were fired, correct?
That's correct.
And then after Aaron Feist was shot, there are no additional shots for another 26 seconds. Isn't that correct?
I have to look at the timeline. That sounds accurate.
because the next round of shots into 1231 was at 2:23:51. Isn't that correct?
What's the counsel's testifying.
No, that's overruled.
You can answer.
Again, I'd have to look at the timeline for the exact times. He goes up to the second floor and he shoots the six rounds into the building. I don't remember the exact seconds, but it's all on a timeline.
Okay. And that would have been north. The shooter would be pointing his weapon north into room 1231. Isn't that correct?
Well, again, the building's kind of oriented, so he was been firing westbound, kind of into those second floor building classrooms where no one was hit, because the rounds impacted the window on the west side of the 1200 building. We're talking about the second floor, right?
We're talking about the second floor. The round of gunfire into 1234, for example, would have been in the direction of my client, correct?
Yes.
And would have.
But that's west, kind of westbound. It's I'll go northwest with you, but it's west. Cruz would have been firing westbound.
You're certain of that?
The 700 building is west of the 1200 building.
If the football field is west.
That's northwest, yes.
Okay. And my client would have been positioned south
west.
Of the 1200 building, correct?
No, he's directly across from the 1200 building and the 700 building.
Doesn't that put him south, sir?
It's kind of southwest. The building is not exactly north-south. It's kind of on an angle.
My client's on the east side of the 1200 building, further south, correct?
No, he's on the west side of the 1200 building. The 1200 building is the furthest east building, so he's west of the 1200 building.
Is your testimony that my client was on the west side of the 1200 building or the east side?
He was at the 700 building, which is on the west side of the 1200 building. It's the building west of the 1200 building. I mean, we're going to put the map up. I'll show you.
The 1200 building is the furthest east building of the campus.
Okay, if this is the 700 building.
Yeah, this is going west. So your client was west of the 1200 building.
You're saying that this is west? Isn't the football field west?
Okay, so 1200 building. This is where he was standing. So this is west. This whole area is west. This is east.
The football field is west.
That's northwest. This is southwest.
And my client was over here, correct?
Yes.
So this would have put him south of the 1200 building, correct?
And west of the 1200 building. Westbound. I mean, we can argue with it. I mean, it's not east, because east is this way.
If he's positioned over here,
mm-hmm.
You're saying that this is west of the 1200 building?
Objection asked.
I'm saying it's south.
No, hold on. The objection is overruled. Go ahead, sir. You can
answer. That's your testimony. Okay. Regardless, though, my client could not have seen what was occurring on the west side of the 1200 building. Isn't that correct?
That was the point of that? Yes, you're correct.
And so Aaron Feist being shot, my client couldn't physically have seen that, correct?
No.
And this building, the 1200 building, is 73 yards long. Isn't that correct?
That sounds accurate.
So my client would have been at least 73 yards away from where Aaron Feist was shot. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
And Aaron Feist was shot on the west side with the west side door open, correct?
Yes.
And the total amount of time that the shooter was in that building was 6 minutes and 36 seconds. Isn't that correct?
That sounds accurate, yes.
But my client wasn't there until the last 4 minutes and 15 seconds. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
So the total time that my client has to react, identify where the shooter or shooters are located, get in there and kill the killer would have been merely 4 minutes and 15 seconds. Isn't that correct?
Well, again, you're using the term kill the killer. I wouldn't use that term. Your time frame is correct.
Okay.
But the action, I kind of disagree with what you're saying the action would have been.
Okay. The total time that my client had to confront whoever was creating this massacre would have been 4 minutes and 15 seconds, correct?
That's correct.
And by the way, let me show you what's been marked as defense exhibit. Looks like L or C. Okay. Let me show you and ask you if you recognize Who's containing this photograph?
What is the exhibit marked as?
It looks like an L judge or a C. I'm not sure. I'm showing what's been marked as defense exhibit L. Do you recognize who's contained in that photo?
Yep.
Okay, is that fair? Who is that?
Nicholas Jacob Cruz.
Okay. Does this fairly and accurately identify Nicholas Jacob Cruz?
Yes.
Okay, Judge, we'd move this into evidence.
Any objection?
No, Judge.
Without objection, defense L for identification will now be in evidence. That is defense exhibit 3.
Judge, if I can have this one, please.
As soon as Matt and Ms. Wilcox marks the exhibit.
That's Nicholas Cruz, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Is that the person responsible for killing all those people?
Yes, he is.
And you were the lead investigator in this case, correct?
Yes, I was.
He had nobody else with him, correct?
No, he did not.
But at the time, you didn't know it, correct, when you arrived on scene?
No.
In fact, none of the officers that worked for BSO would have known that there was just one shooter on campus, correct?
That's correct.
Your role is not as the lead investigator in the case against Scott Peterson, correct?
No, it is not.
You are the lead investigator in the state of Florida versus Nicholas Cruz, correct?
I was, yes.
That case is over with, correct?
Yes.
And the way that it worked in that case is that you conducted a very professional and thorough investigation, did you not?
I don't know if that's a statement or a question. I would like to believe I did, but...
Yeah, no, it is. It's a statement. Do you agree with that?
I did an investigation that culminated in him pleading guilty to 17 counts of murder and 17 counts of attempted murder.
And the investigation was extensive over many, many years even, correct?
That is correct.
And during that time, you interview numerous witnesses, correct?
Yes.
You take sworn statements from hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of witnesses, correct?
Not so much hundreds on this case, but in my career, yes, hundreds of witnesses.
Okay. And you have pages of reports, correct?
On this case, yes.
And when we say on this case, we're referring to Nicholas Cruz, correct?
Yes.
Okay, that's what we're talking about right now. Okay? So I want to know what your role was in Nicholas Cruz and what a lead investigator does in a case, right?
Yes.
And you don't determine what charges get filed, correct?
No, we, in this case, we charge him with a probable cause affidavit.
This... You keep saying in this case. We're referring to Nicholas Cruz,
okay.
Correct? So I'm just asking you, ultimately, a prosecutor in the Nicholas Cruz case makes the determination what charges should be filed, correct?
Objection relevance.
That's the statement.
The prosecutor doesn't investigate the case. That's your job, correct?
Objection relevance.
No, that's overruled. Go ahead, sir. You can answer that question.
Yes, but in that case, it was presented to a grand jury, and then the state attorney, obviously, from there took over.
In cases where there's no grand jury, you do an investigation, correct?
Yes.
You present your reports to the prosecutor, correct?
Yes.
And it's important that those reports are very accurate and detailed, correct?
Yes.
For two primary purposes. Number one, you have to rely upon the accuracy of those reports years later when you testify, correct?
Yes.
And you often refresh your recollection utilizing those reports, correct?
Yes.
But also because you're submitting reports to a prosecutor for them to determine what the facts are, correct?
Well, the report is based on statements, so they have both the statements and the report to rely on.
And then based upon what's submitted to the prosecutor decides what might the appropriate charges be, correct?
Objection, yes. Relevance.
Yeah, that's the same.
Okay. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
And you were not the lead investigator in this case. That was Keith Riddick. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Now, regarding the shooting, you weren't there when any of the gunshots rang out, correct?
That is correct.
You have no firsthand knowledge of how challenging it was to determine precisely where the shooters were located based upon sound, correct?
I would say in this case, that's correct.
You must have spoken, let me ask you, did you interview any witnesses who heard shots being fired to find out where they thought those shots were coming from?
In reference to my investigation, I interviewed some of them. A lot of them were interviewed by Keith Riddick, but yes, I interviewed some of them.
Okay. And did you ever supply any of those names to Keith Riddick?
Yes.
And in those statements, you would have identified where they were positioned, correct?
Yes.
And where they thought the shots might have been coming from, correct?
Yes.
And you thought that was being of service to Keith Riddick, so he can include that as part of the case against Scott Peterson, correct?
Again, when I would come upon somebody on my case that I was interviewing, if it crossed over into what Keith Riddick was investigating, I would say, in particular, this is a guy, have you interviewed him yet? If not, you need to.
Did you, through your investigation, ever compile a list of all of the hundreds of students who were coming out of the building to determine where they were when the shots rang out and where they thought the shots were coming from?
What we did, and this is going to be somewhat of a long answer, since we evacuated the entire school, we had to get in contact with everybody who was on campus that day to find out if they heard shots or what they saw. And it wasn't just me doing it, it was hundreds of detectives from every agency. If they heard or saw something of relevance, it was then funneled back to us. If they didn't, if they were like in the whatever 800 building and they didn't see or hear anything, then they were not provided, I didn't get their names, they were just documented by the agency.
Is it your testimony that you spoke or had someone speak to every one of the, let's say, 1,000 of kids that were both in the 700 building and the neighboring buildings that came out during the fire alarm?
We split up the school roster of not only staff members but students. And when I say we, I'm talking about the sheriff's office, and detectives contacted, they had like 25 on a sheet. And they were supposed to contact every one of them to find out if they had any relevant information towards the investigation.
Where are those sheets?
They're in the case file. But anybody who had significant information then was funneled back to a detective to be formally interviewed. If they just hid in the auditorium and they didn't see or hear anything, then they were not funneled back to us.
I'm referring to kids who came out of these buildings and heard shots fired. Where are those? Those notes are in the case file?
No. What I'm telling you is everybody who was on campus was recontacted because we had sent everybody potentially running off campus. The investigation that you're talking about is Keith Riddick's files.
Right. Okay.
I mean, if I had a crossover witness...
Fair enough. I understand that you're not the lead on this case. But, so it's Keith Riddick who would have been responsible for what you're talking about, correct?
If I can I give you a very short example of
what... I just want to know if the answer is yes or no. It would have been Keith Riddick responsible for that, not you, correct?
Keith Riddick was responsible for the investigation about the police response, not just Scott Peterson, but any police response. Mine was Nicholas Cruz.
I understand, but Keith Riddick is the sole lead investigator in the case against Scott Peterson, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Now, when you arrived on scene, did you know that Coral Springs had a separate 911 call center?
No, I did not.
You learned that after the fact, right?
Yes.
Did you think when you arrived that when people were calling in to 911 saying there's a shooter in the 1200 building and kids are being killed, that somehow that information was being disseminated to BSO?
again, when I'm on scene, I didn't know that even existed. Obviously, afterwards, I learned about that issue.
Also, in terms of patching, did you think that Coral Springs Radio would have been patched with BSO so that they could be working in concert together?
That's a normal protocol when you have agencies that are not a part of the BSO radio system.
It's normal protocol, but it was protocol that you learned was not followed in this case, correct?
I think it was attempted, but because of the radio problems that day, on both ends, they weren't able to accomplish it. I think they tried to patch, but the BSO radio system was failing based on how many radios were trying to key up at the same time, where you would, I don't even know what the term is anymore, it would go into fail-soft mode, where you couldn't transmit and you couldn't hear.
How fair is that to officers who are on the scene?
I was one of the officers on the scene. I mean, I don't know how fair it is. That's just what happened. It's just the way, unfortunately, the way it happened that day.
When you say unfortunate, why is it unfortunate?
Because, again, you're trying to gather real-time intelligence, and as police officers in the modern era, we rely on our radios.
Right.
And to get communications from people who have the best real-time intelligence, and in this case, because the radios failed, that was a difficult task.
Impossible for some who would try to get on their radios and it would throttle, correct?
Yes.
Explain for the jurors what would happen if someone had some important real-time intelligence to convey to my client or other officers on the scene. Tell us what would happen.
Again, the technology is well beyond my expertise, but if you try to transmit, it would make this alarming boinking sound, which meant it wasn't coming over because there were just too many people trying to either transmit or they were flooding. There's only so many slots that you can get on the radio system, and once that overfills, it goes into fail-safe or fail-soft mode.
And so first responders, you would agree, were grossly hindered by the fact that the radios were not working properly, correct?
I would say that's accurate.
The fact that the radios with Coral Springs were not patched, correct?
Yes.
And that nobody from Coral Springs called BSO dispatch to say, hey, here's some information you might want to convey to your officers, correct?
I know they tried to transfer some 911 calls, and in some cases that failed as well, because Coral Springs was getting the 911 calls from, in some cases, inside the building, and when they would try to transfer them to BSO, the transfers weren't going through.
And so all that information was never conveyed to BSO officers like my client, isn't that correct?
No, it wasn't transferred. It wasn't given over the radio at all that I can recall.
And there's no question, through your investigation, you learned that there were numerous children calling in from the 1200 building indicating exactly where the shooter was located, correct?
Children and teachers.
And that went to Coral Springs, not BSO, isn't that correct?
That is absolutely correct.
You agree that that is unacceptable, correct?
Objection, Judge.
Yeah, that's the stain. His opinion, he's a fact witness, not an expert witness. His opinion is not relevant. Go ahead, sir.
That is not how you guys were trained, correct?
I would say it's not optimum, because it's not the way we're trained. It's just the fact that if you're responding to an incident, again, you're trying to get real-time intelligence by whatever means you can, and a 911 call from inside the building is real-time intelligence.
When you arrived on scene, I think you testified earlier that a lieutenant colonel told you that someone was shot, correct?
No, that was while I was at the public safety building.
Okay. That information never came out over your BSO radio, correct?
I think that may have been one of the guys on Holmberg actually saying he had a guy shot at the football field, which was Mr. Lamont.
That is correct. Football field. Did you hear that announcement saying that somebody was on the football field being shot?
Well, when a lieutenant colonel came running in, he didn't say football field. He just said there was a student shot and there was a shooting up at the school.
My question is, did you hear Deputy Kratz announce in real time that the shots were coming from the football field?
I didn't the day of the incident. I heard it afterwards while I was doing my investigation.
And just so we're clear, that when Deputy Kratz makes that announcement during the shooting, the shooter was in the middle of the third floor, correct? Did you match that up?
I don't know if he was in the middle. I think he was in the teacher's planning room, I believe.
He had not gotten to the teacher's planning room. Isn't that correct?
I'd have to look at the timeline. I just know he was on the third floor.
That's correct. Now, you told the prosecutor that the purpose of your interview with my client was to find out more about Nicholas Cruz. That's what you said, correct?
Well, that was part of it.
I mean, right. So tell the jurors the other part of it, sir.
The part of it, which is the beginning stages, is what he saw, your client, and what he heard that day. Just where he was at.
Just so we're clear, this is not a formal debriefing as required by the active shooter policy, correct? That wasn't your purpose. Correct?
No, I'm a homicide detective. I don't do formal debriefings.
Got it. You're aware that the active shooter policy requires timely debriefings of officers. You're aware of that, correct?
I'd have to read it again, but that sounds accurate.
Just so we're clear, a debriefing is when you get into detail with someone to learn exactly what they know, what they feel, what they think, correct?
Debriefing, in my opinion, is so you can review what happened to make things better if there was an issue.
That was not your purpose, correct?
No, I was a homicide investigator in charge of the investigation of the killings.
And isn't it a fact that this interview actually happened because, first of all, Brian Tutler and Zach Scott were liaisons to the families, correct?
That's correct.
And family members started asking where Peterson was during the shooting, correct?
Objection, yes. Judge. Yep.
Well, pause on the objection because we're over for a restroom break anyway. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to pause on the cross-examination. I'm going to give you a real quick restroom break. Same admonition as always. Please don't discuss the facts of the case, the evidence, the witnesses, or the testimony. Outside the presence of the jury, everyone can be seated. Ms. Combs, what's your legal objection?
Judge, it's hearsay, first of all, as to what these other men, I think their names were Zach. I don't know who their names were, but also it's irrelevant as to the motivations behind.
So the question to the witness was, isn't it true that parents made certain statements out of court that are not to this witness? So why is that not hearsay?
Judge, first of all, it's impeachment. His answer was, the only reason why I conducted this interview was to, quote, find out about Nicholas Cruz. To impeach him, first and foremost, his testimony and deposition is that they were there to find out what occurred because the family members started asking where Peterson was during the shooting, and that then his sergeant said, we then need to interview Peterson, and that's when they went to the public safety building for the sworn statement.
Okay, so then what, again, we've had this discussion before, what is the relevance for this jury as to why?
At a minimum, it's impeachment, Judge. He said that the purpose was for one thing, but there actually is sworn testimony, and he began to concede that there was another purpose as to why it was.
So are you saying it's not hearsay because you're using it for impeachment purposes?
I'm saying it's not hearsay because it goes to state of mind. Why did he conduct this?
Isn't it not being offered for the truth? You're asserting that actually happened, right?
So no.
It's not, of course, statement being asserted for the truth of the matter.
It goes to his state of mind.
Whose state of
mind? This witness's state of mind.
Why is his state of mind relevant as to what this jury has to decide? Again, I'm going to let you do a proffer outside of the presence of the jury when we're done with all this, but this is inerts to the discussion that we've had several times before. This jury isn't going to be asked to decide why charges were filed or what the reason charges were filed. The only decision they have to make is, has the state proven beyond a reasonable doubt each element of the crime's charge? The reason
that the charges were filed is not in the purview of the jury, and I'm going to sustain the state's objection. I'm not going to let you.
Your Honor, it's impeachment. The officer testified the sole reason was to find out about Nicholas Cruz. I can't bring up.
That's not what he said.
No, it's not.
Hold on, sir.
Sorry. You want me to leave, Your Honor?
If you would like to step down and use the restroom, you just can't talk to anyone about your testimony.
He left off the other portion, Judge, that he's asked by family members.
I disagree with you, sir. He said, you asked him that last question, and he said it was two reasons. Number one, I was the homicide detective for Nicholas Cruz. Number two, I wanted to find out what Mr. Peterson
right. He said. He left out the other reason.
That doesn't matter. Mr. Okay. I know you don't agree with my ruling, sir, but it doesn't matter.
Then note my objection for the record, okay? And if you're sustaining the objection, again, I'm...
No, I'm going to, when we're done, redirect examination if there is any, recross if there is any. I'll send the jury out again, and you may make your record and ask the detective whatever you would like to ask to as a proffer.
Yeah, and Judge,
as I've let you do with the other.
The state was the one who asked him what his reasons were for doing, and he left out the primary reason why he did this, which is what he tells us in deposition. In deposition, he said the primary reason was because the families wanted to know where Peterson was at. And I'm not allowed to bring that out in front of the jury? Okay, so note my objection.
State, anything else you need me to address?
No, Judge.
All right, real quick, 5 minute restroom break. We'll be in recess for 5 minutes.
That's segment number one. There is more to come. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
This has been a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.